First matter on calendar this morning is case Anderson v. Wells Cargo, Inc., 54962. Justice Perry has recused himself as to this matter. Justice Hardesty is not in jurisdiction at this time. He will review the tapes of the oral argument and weigh in as to deliberation. With that, if the parties are ready to proceed, please do so. Please state your name and if you wish to reserve any time.
Micah Eccles for Appellant Andy Anderson. This is a case, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is a case in which the district court improperly applied the completed and accepted doctrine to dismiss Anderson's claims by summary judgment. The completed and accepted doctrine dates back to the McPherson versus Buick case from 1916. In McPherson, the New York court found that because a wheel on the car collapsed, that there was no need for contractual privity between the manufacturer of the car, which had been sold and then resold, and the plaintiff. The completed and accepted doctrine, as analyzed in the Restatement of Torts, Section 385, is tied back to the pre-McPherson law. In the Cosgrove case versus Matthews that this court decided in 1962, the court adopted the McPherson rule and specifically applied the McPherson rule to construction cases like the case that's before the court today.
But even if the district court's order, paragraph 2, says Plaintiff Anderson failed to present any evidence that Superior failed to install or apply the signage reflectors or reflective paint. And indeed, the record shows that all of that was signed off on and passed over. So you still have to show that there was an act or omission by the subcontractor that was deficient. And where I am having trouble is not with the legal issues, but the factual issues of what did you offer that showed a genuine issue of material fact on the critical issue of whether this entity did or didn't do something it should have.
Thank you. I want to expand on that a little bit because what we're most interested in, we conferenced before this, and we're most interested in the alleged error of the denial of the 56F. What additional discovery and what would that have shown? Which goes along with Justice Pickering's issue of material facts. So if material were present, what material fact would have been developed with the 56F?
Okay, I'll answer those questions. And before I do that, I want to preface my remarks with, if you take a look at the McPherson rule that the court adopted in Cosgrove, really the burden is not placed upon the plaintiff. For example, in McPherson, the plaintiff didn't have to explain how this wheel collapsed. In the Coke bottle cases that spontaneously explode, the burden of proof is really put back on the defendant. And I think that's where the court got it wrong here, is she was expecting Anderson, who ran into this median without any notice that it was there, for us to reconstruct exactly what happened. Really, if you take the beginning point, and if the defendants are to be believed, that they installed the reflectors, the paint, the signs, as they said they would. And the end result of how Anderson found the median, there is some responsibility for the defendants to prove how it got into that state.
Counsel, that means that we would never have a situation where summary judgment would be appropriate. I mean, you're ignoring the procedural posture, which I think is what we are all troubled with. We understand that you don't have to prove what was wrong, but we need to get past the procedural issue in this case.
Now, with regard to what evidence we did actually present, I've made a list here.
Or what you believe further discovery would have provided you with respect to the cause of action?
Sure. First, I'll address whatever evidence we did present, and then I'll go on to what additional information I think and what it would have shown. What the defendants rely upon is their co-defendant, Clark County, who's no longer in this case, their admissions that everything was done right. Now, we don't know exactly who signed off on those admissions because they were signed by counsel. But the key witness for the county who the defendants rely upon is Fred Hutt. And what he said in his deposition on page 154 of the appendix is he didn't remember whether the reflectors were installed. Then on page 156, he also said that the glue on the reflectors is supposed to last many years. But he wasn't sure what kind of glue was used on this particular medium. He also said on page 160 of the appendix that the contractor is supposed to prepare the as-built plans. And he also, on page 166 of the appendix, said that there should have been an R47 keep right sign installed. Now, with regard to the Howell report that was presented, I know the court has expressed some concern with regard to the Howell report. Now, the Howell report does have information within it. There, if you look in the Howell report in the first few pages, it talks about the Elliott report that was reviewed in preparation for Howell preparing his report. The Elliott report was actually another reconstruction report that contained also the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police report and the photos taken by the answering officer at the time. Now, there's another issue with the work order. This is on page 118 of the appendix. No one ever authenticated this work order. The work order on its face just says that somewhere between Patrick and Oquendo, there was an R47 sign replaced. We don't know exactly where. In Fred Hutt's, in his deposition.
But it was replaced, so there had been one installed at the time that Superior was on the job, which is consistent with the records that there are. That's a difficult issue for you, that there's a record that shows that the sign was replaced. Well, what responsibility did they have for replacing the sign when they were gone?
Now, the issue with this work order, and let me point you to the appendix page, starting at page 159 and then through pages 165 and 166, Hutt says he didn't know which end of this median the sign was replaced. Because if you look at the Howell report presently states that there's actually an R47 sign on the opposite end of the median where Anderson's accident was.
And so what information would you have gathered in further discovery? Who would have told you what that would have cleaned up the edges around what Mr. Huff didn't know?
There is a Mr. Dempsey who came.
He also took his deposition too, though.
But we didn't take his deposition. He didn't come forward until after the minute order was entered. So that's one person whose name is not in the record that we recently discovered, but we had no way to present it. Now, on page 47 of the record, this is Anderson's request for additional time for discovery. The first two pages, he identifies all the discovery that's already been completed, and then he outlines what additional information would be needed. For one, the depositions of the defendant's expert. We never had the chance to do that, to nail them down exactly on the three issues of the sign, the reflectors, and the paint. We believe that there would have been at least some factual issue there with regard to, was it actually placed there, or was it placed there but then failed? It didn't last the duration that it should have.
So the additional discovery that you needed was the depositions of the defendant's experts?
Well, there was that, and then there was the continued deposition of the plaintiff, our client, when he hit this median, his motorcycle slid, he has about $1 million in meds, and so he didn't have a chance to fully explain his story because his deposition was suspended and never continued.
Did he put in an affidavit in opposition to the motion for summary judgment?
He did not put an actual affidavit in.
Your client did not recall, is that correct, as to the accident?
His memory was very spotty, Your Honor. That's correct, because of his brain injuries.
Well, spotty is he just didn't recall the incident, period.
Well, he remembered some things, but at a certain point after he goes, he's traveling on Rainbow. You're correct, Your Honor. He didn't remember what happened, almost like he blacked out, because he did lose consciousness.
So he may have retrograde amnesia or some...
I'm sorry?
He may have retrograde amnesia. Is that in the record that...
I'm not exactly sure what the extent of his injuries are, because those were not part of the summary judgment.
But I want to nail down what else you identified that would yield information generating material issues, genuine issues of material fact. You have the defendant's experts' depositions weren't taken yet. Plaintiff's wasn't completed.
There was written discovery from Wells Cargo that hadn't been responded.
And how would that have been likely to produce something yielding a material issue?
Well, one of the issues in the case is that there were approximately, we know that there was 3 years of warranty on the materials. And we know that there were some callbacks of warranty work. We don't have a full disclosure within the record as it is now of exactly what all that warranty work was. And then there were also...
I'm sorry. So you would have to speculate that some of that warranty work somehow applied to the intersection where your client was injured?
Correct. We don't know, but we'd assume that there could possibly be something in there. And the individual I identified earlier, Mr. Dempsey, he was an engineer who worked on the intersection and unfortunately did not come forward and agree to cooperate with us until after summary judgment had been granted. He says that he has information regarding the construction.
Is that within the record, Counsel?
That's not on the record, Your Honor. His name does appear in one of the depositions, but he had not before agreed to cooperate with us until after summary judgment.
He was an engineer for whom?
My understanding is that he was an engineer for the county.
But the county's gone, right?
Right, but there are still two other engineers whose deposition testimony is found within the record that the court apparently looked at in deciding summary judgment. Thank you.
Good morning. Bernadette Rigo for Superior Traffic Services. I'd just like to address a couple of issues that appellant's counsel stated. There is nothing in the record that there was ever a warranty claim from Clark County after the completion of the project. Nothing in the record. As to who Mr. Dempsey is, this is the first time I've heard that appellant wanted to depose Mr. Dempsey. So I really don't know who he is and what he knows. But I'd like to address the issues that the court put in your order, the first two being interrelated, if I can address those two issues at the same time. The first issue is whether appellant was dilatory in conducting discovery. And he had about a six-month period from the time that he opposed the first motion to the time that lower court heard the second round of oral arguments. During that entire time, he did not conduct any discovery. He actually stated today that he needed to get Wells Cargo's responses, but nothing in the record stated that or shows that he filed a motion to compel Wells Cargo. So if it was essential for him to oppose the motion for summary judgment to get all this information, he was dilatory in not doing so for a six-month period. Nothing in the record even shows that he noticed any depositions. Issue number three is whether there are any latent or patent defects in the work performed by respondents. I submit that there is no such showing in this case. You take a look at some of the evidence that is being presented to show that there is some negligence on the part of Superior, the fact that the warranty period is still in effect at the time of the accident does not equate to a conclusion that Superior used defective products. Clark County Superintendent Fred Hutt, his lack of recollection as to what happened five or six years ago does not equate to Superior not installing the R47 sign or an adequate number of reflective buttons. And even experts, appellant's expert report does not state how Superior's use of allegedly defective product or their performance led to the condition of the median at the time of the accident.
Well, but what his argument, as I understand it, is, and set aside the 56F issue for a moment, that it's a reasonable inference to infer from the condition of the accident site at the time his expert looked at it, and then at the time the accident occurred earlier, say there are deficiencies in that, the signage and the paint, et cetera, and he wants us to infer back from that 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 meant your client didn't adequately create or perform its work and left those premises in an unsafe condition. Why is that not an appropriate inference to indulge on summary judgment is, I guess, the question.
Well, I think it goes back to the issue of the completed, you know, project. Clark County accepted the responsibility of maintaining this project, including the median, 5 years ago, or I'm sorry, 3 years prior to this accident. And also, there is evidence that Abellin actually introduced that there were other accidents before the subject accident at this median. Whether, you know, what Abellin did is take some information or some testimony from Fred Hutt's deposition and said this is why there is negligence on the part of Superior. But it's hard to do that when there's also evidence to show that Fred Hutt said that the reflective buttons could have been taken out because of an accident. So they can't rely on speculation and conjecture to show that Superior was negligent in the initial installation of this median. So the 56F issue, actually the main thing that I forgot to address is there is nothing in the briefs that shows how additional discovery on the part of appellant would lead to the discovery of a genuine issue of material fact. And I think that is one of the requirements this court laid out in Aviation Ventures versus Joan Morris. So I think just for that fact that they did not lay out in their request or in their briefs how further discovery will lead to a genuine issue of material fact, it shows that there is no abuse of discretion on the part of the district court in not allowing further time for discovery. The next issue is number four, whether the district court was able to meaningfully apply Cosgrove to this case when it did not allow further discovery. And the answer is yes. And the reason is this court limited the holding of Cosgrove to the facts of that case, meaning where the defect was latent and the owners of the defective product did not really have time to maintain and repair it because the product in that case failed the day it was installed. This court in Cosgrove provided that it was not deciding the contractor's liability or whether it would extend the McPherson doctrine where the defect is patent, latent but known to the owners, or where the owners exercise active supervision throughout the building of the structure. When the lower court granted the MSJ in this case, it had been provided with the following undisputed facts. One, appellant agrees that the defects at the median were patented by the time the accident occurred, and this is in Joint Appendix page 466, line 25, to page 467, line 19. It is also undisputed that Clark County conducted daily inspections and provided a design plan and product specifications, Joint Appendix, page 156 and 157. And Clark County accepted the responsibility for the maintenance of the project. So based on the facts that were in front of the lower court at the time it made its decision, the district court was able to meaningfully apply Cosgrove, meaning that the court had sufficient facts to determine that the case did not apply to the facts of this case. Issue number five is why this court must apply the factors in Jones, a California case. To me, it's not clear whether the district court actually relied on the Jones case when it granted Superior and Los Cargos motions for summary judgment. Although Judge Leavitt requested that the parties discuss the Jones case in their supplemental briefs and during the second oral argument, she did not include the case in her minute order. She only cited Shalava in her minute order and the final order granting the motions for summary judgment. But if this court determines that the district court did rely on the Jones matter, on the Jones case in reaching its decision, the reliance was not misplaced. The rationale and holding in the Jones case are consistent with the Shalaba and the Cosgrove case, because the Jones, the California Supreme Court addressed the issue of whether the alleged defect was latent or patent, and also addressed the issue of control as this court did in Shalaba. As for the appellant's argument that a balancing test should be applied, as the Biaconha case did, this is not the holding of the Jones case. The Jones court provided that the completed and accepted doctrine retains its vitality in determining a contractor's liability unless the multi-factor test dictates a departure from that doctrine. Issue number six is how Shalava and Cosgrove interact and which controls where there is further liability. Again, the two cases interact because it focuses on whether the owner can detect and then correct the alleged defective product or premises. Shalava should control because there are issues here that, or there are facts here that Clark County took the responsibility over for maintaining this median. And the cost of case is not applicable because the alleged defects at the median were patent, at least by the time of the subject accident. And I think I addressed this a little bit, but the Howell report was not relevant because it only offered to show the condition of the median at the accident and the reasons why Anderson's accident occurred. But again, it does not state anything about Superior's negligence, what kind of defective products they used. And that's the same thing for Mr. Howell's affidavit that appellant provided in his opposition to the motion for summary judgment. The affidavit pretty much contained the same opinions as the report. Mr. Howell is an accident reconstruction expert. He's not a products liability expert. He's not a construction defect expert. And there is nothing, again, in the record that shows how Superior was negligent, number one, whether they use any defective product, but also whether that alleged negligence and alleged use of defective product led to the condition of the median at the time of the accident. I want to reserve time for Blair Parker, counsel for Wells Cargo, to address some of the issues. Thank you very much for your time.
Good morning, Blair Parker on behalf of Wells Cargo. And I'll just jump right to the issue of the 56F. It really is not an issue. No motion to compel was ever filed. There was during the initial hearing, there was a reference made at the end, hey, by the way, Wells Cargo doesn't have interrogatories. It's remedied before the June hearing. And in fact, during the June hearing, if you look at the Joint Exhibit 2, 456, plaintiff's counsel was mainly concerned when asked about discovery that They haven't deposed our expert yet. They haven't deposed our expert to know what he's going to say. Well, we don't have to depose their expert. And that was their main concern, as expressed at the hearing in June. That was the only issue raised about any additional discovery, what's needed. Hey, they haven't deposed our expert. That's not an issue. Also, reference has been made, or I think it's significant, to look at the discovery conference minute, base stamp 495 to 498, volume 2. That was after that hearing, and at that time it was actually a minute order with my representation to the court. But basically, Your Honor, none of us are going to do any more discovery because we're waiting for the order to come. So we didn't want to go through the expense of deposing experts. If the judge was going to grant the motion for summary judgment, why go through all the expense? If the judge didn't, then we'd go ahead and depose. So that was kind of an agreement by the parties, and it's on the record that I stated when the discovery commissioner asked, or the court asked, so, Your Honor, we're holding off until we get an order.
Had your expert's report been produced at that point?
All experts' reports have been produced. Now, whether they wanted to depose him or not is another issue.
So that whatever he was going to say was in the report.
That's correct. And, you know, we hadn't deposed their medical doctors. That's not our issue. We've got what we wanted through the discovery. So really, there is no issue regarding the discovery. Wells Cargo is the general contractor. That really the only issue of the work that was involved in this case is that of Superior's. The work file was produced at the very beginning. There was the issue raised in the initial one towards the end. Hey, we don't have answers to interrogatories from Wells Cargo's. That was remedied before the second hearing. And then there was no motion to compel. If that was
Could you comment on his point about the complete discovery from your client may have yielded warranty complaint information?
There is evidence on that issue by taking the deposition of the county, all the county's personnel, about there were no warranty issues. We never called them back. We loved the work. This case is a little unique because here you have the owner basically saying, hey, we love the work. You met every specification we wanted. We were there. We observed. We designed it. We set the specifications. We were there every day. We liked the work. It was great. They never called us back. And again, going a little bit to the questions about the inferences, about drawing the inference from 2005 back, there's also evidence in the record that there have been subsequent accidents to this. And in fact, there was an accident that's contained in the record where a car had hit that sign, a drunk driver, and had carried it on down. So that the inference is it had been, the only thing we have in the record is the owner, county, going, hey, we love your work, and the county, as far as an expert in, I mean, they designed it, specifications, oversaw it, they loved the work, and they have the county going, we never called them back. I mean, even when that accident happened, they needed to replace a sign, they didn't call Wells Cargo, they didn't call Superior, they went out and did it themselves. This is also unique in that the county, I honestly think probably Wells Cargo would have gotten in trouble if they just showed up somehow to look at a sign or repaint or do anything. It's the county's responsibility. We can't just go out and show up on after it's been completed for 2 years. So again, the issue of discovery is really a non-issue, and that the discovery minute report kind of sets it forth. Nobody wanted to do additional discovery pending what the court was going to do. Thank you.
I'll just address these discovery issues. Now, because of the informal agreement that there was among counsel before the discovery commissioner on the second occasion, she went ahead and extended discovery again, waiting for the motion for summary judgments to be decided. The summary judgment proceedings really went on for about 9 months. We had obtained our first extension of discovery. Instead of allowing us to do the discovery, Superior immediately filed a motion for summary judgment. And then when we had the first hearing in front of the district court, the judge was basically, she said, I'm going to decide this case based on Jones. And then if you read the hearing transcript for the second hearing, she did, you know, her main concern was Jones. And she says, I don't want to extend all this litigation to, you know, for contractors to have to address from third parties. But if you look in the Cosgrove case in the older Supreme Court cases where it identifies all the arguments made by the parties, the first page of the opinion talks about the argument that if we allow a contractor to be liable to a third party for defective workmanship, then there's going to be this endless litigation. The court rejected that argument already and said that there is going to be, based on the McPherson rule.
But what showing is there of defective workmanship? That's the problem.
Now, I mean, basically, I'm going back to the fact that it's the condition it was found in was defective. And they've talked about there's evidence in the record of accidents. There's really not. The only evidence of accidents is that there were some accidents at the other end of the median. There's nothing in any of the police reports or anything that we subpoenaed that would show that they were done on the same side as Anderson. And that's really the issue. If there's really nothing that shows the sign was actually put there. The only thing we have as a resultant condition is that it was gone. Now, of course, they've offered all kinds of factual issues about there could have been X or could have been Y that happened to the reflectors, the paint, and the sign. But they don't really have any evidence to say this is exactly what happened in order to prove the intervening or superseding cause. And that's really where the court turned our whole case on its head and said it's your duty to prove all this contrary to McPherson, contrary to Cosgrove. And the court was really relying upon Jones and applied Jones to the Shalaba case. So thank you.
Well, thanks, counsel, on both sides for their arguments this day and shedding light on this area. This matter will stand submitted. Thank you.